heard how Krishna reveals so much knowledge about how he can be seen within the material world for the purpose of allowing Arjuna to remember him. And remembering Krishna is actually the essence of all sadhana. Of all the practices of Krishna consciousness, the essence of them and the purpose behind them is to always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. So this is so difficult to do as we live in the material world. Instead of seeing Krishna, we look and we see bodies, we see hair, we see sky, we see wood, we see brick, concrete, we see pigs, we see the ground, the grass, we see the sun, but we don't see Krishna. And therefore, we're in Maya. Because Krishna, everything has their source in Krishna. So to teach us actually the art of connecting everything with Krishna, in our consciousness, everything naturally has a connection with Krishna because Krishna is Sarva Karana Karanam. So by definition, Krishna is the source of everything. If he's the cause of all causes, that means he's the source of everything. But we do not see that due to Maya. Maya means is not. Maya covers our vision. Maya covers our heart. Maya covers us completely. And what does it cover us with? Ignorance. And the basis, or the basic ignorance that Maya covers us with is the identification with the material body, with this body, and I think this is me. This is the basic ignorance. And with this body, I make all my attempts to enjoy myself on the subtle and gross levels. This is called ignorance, or Maya. And regardless of how I try to enjoy myself, all my attempts fail. So to crack this ignorance, Krishna teaches in the Bhagavad Gita how we see everything in relationship to him. Bhumi upon alovayu kamano buddha eva cha ahamkarai kilame bina prasita mastava apariyam itatva nam prakriti virime param jiva bhuta mahabaho dayate yudete dayate jagatya. That how everything that we can see, everything from this to this to this to this to this to this, this is just different combinations of the living entity, the soul, and Krishna's Bina Prakriti, or separated material energy. Just different combinations of that. And he teaches that, Krishna also teaches that he is the beginning and the end and middle of all living entities, mataparataram na anyat kinshirasi. The Krishna is behind everything, just as the thread is behind the counterbeats, although we cannot see it. Or the sutre maniginayiva, the thread is behind the pearls of a necklace. We cannot see that thread, but yet it is that thread that holds everything together. And that thread throughout all reality is Krishna. So in the seventh chapter, Krishna has explained how he is the source of everything. And he's given us knowledge, transcendental knowledge, so we can see him everywhere we look. Sarva vidhi nishedha cha ekya eva kinkara. And this is the essence of all the rules and regulations that we follow. From getting up in the morning, to chanting during the day, to the preaching that we do, to the deity worship that we do, to the actually everything, all the prescribed duties, all the rules and regulations, they actually have a purpose. And that purpose is to always remember Krishna and never forget him. This is the essence of all the rules and regulations. And all the rules and regulations are simply servants to that main rule and regulation. So Krishna explained this in the seventh chapter. Then in the eighth chapter, Krishna explained a very important question, the answer to a very important question. How can we remember Krishna? Because that's the essence. At the time of death, Because then, at the time of death, everything is tested for us. In the ninth chapter, Krishna explains many things. And then in the end of the ninth chapter, Krishna explains the special mercy of his dealings with the devotees and why we should worship him as opposed to worshiping the demigods, as opposed to worshiping the impersonal Brahman, opposed to worshiping anything. We should worship Krishna because Krishna takes special care of his devotees. And this is described in the end of chapter 9. And that very, very special section, which is the most intimate part of the entire Bhagavad Gita, it is exactly right in the middle of the Bhagavad Gita. At the end, between 9 and 10, there are 18 chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. And the very middle, the essence, the heart, the core of the Bhagavad Gita is this last part of the ninth chapter. And also, in the same way, the beginning of the 10th chapter. So we're going to just, even though we're going to read from the 10th chapter today, and I'll give you a sheet of paper when we leave that will explain what sections we're going to read from now to the end. A lot of the devotees and their responses mentioned that would be nice. So we help. So we'll prepare that for the remainder of the course. So although we're doing the beginning of the 10th chapter today, we're going to do the end of the 9th chapter tomorrow and hear how Krishna reciprocates with his devotees and about that the special sweetness of the contract in the relationship if someone becomes a devotee. But now, in the beginning of the 10th chapter, Krishna is going to describe his opulences. And this chapter is called Vibhuti Yoga, or the opulences of the Absolute. And in this beginning, and we'll go to the, we'll read until the 11th verse of the Bhagavad Gita, of this chapter. And these four verses, 8, 9, 10, and 11, are Chatushloki Bhagavad Gita. They're the essence of the Bhagavad Gita in four slokas. So we're going to read that, and we'll taste that essence. But first, Krishna explains in the first verse of the 10th chapter, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "Listen again, O mighty Omgar Arjuna, because you are my dear friend, and for your benefit, I shall speak to you further, giving knowledge that is better than what I have already explained." Because in previous chapters, Krishna has explained his energies, his potencies. But here, Krishna is going to explain in that Chatushloki Bhagavad Gita, he's going to explain, and also later on, his opulence. Because if we hear of the opulence of Krishna, if we are not envious, we will realize that he is great and we are tiny and insignificant. If we are envious when we see someone who is great, we don't like that at all. And rather than appreciating his greatness and benefiting from his greatness, if we're envious, we will try to chop him down and make him appear smaller than us. That is envy. And therefore in the ninth chapter, and in many places in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, "I am speaking this to you because you are not envious." Anusuyavedi. This envy, which is situated in our heart, is the essence of our material existence. We are envious of Krishna. We don't want to accept that we should surrender to him, that we are tiny and insignificant. It is the root of our false ego, that we are envious of Krishna. So Krishna is so kindly going here from his own mouth, going to speak of his own opulences. And as he says here, it is for Arjuna's good. He is not glorifying himself. As a mundane person likes to speak of his own glories, Krishna is not doing that. Because he's fixing Arjuna in his own opulences. And by Arjuna hearing of these opulences, he's going to be inspired to serve, just like when we have a friend and we love him very dearly, and then we hear that he's done this and he's done this and he's done this and he's so much wealth and he's so beautiful and he has so many awards and people are coming to him all the time. That simply increases our affection for our friend, even though we may not have known it before. So in order to increase Arjuna's affection and surrender and dependence on Krishna, Krishna is going to speak his opulence, this knowledge that is better than what he has already explained. And remember that the last chapter is entitled The Most Confidential Knowledge. So this knowledge is better than the most confidential knowledge. So how glorious is this knowledge? Verse 2. Neither the hosts of demigods, nor the great sages, nor my origin or opulence. For in every respect I am the source of the demigods and sages. So the demigods, who are so powerful, they cannot understand Krishna's opulence. Why? Because they are attached to matter. And as long as we are attached to matter, we cannot understand Krishna in full and in truth. What to speak of his source, which is actually impossible to understand. And the great sages, who are not attached to matter, they also cannot understand. So practically speaking, as we've mentioned in earlier classes, it's impossible to understand Krishna's opulences and source. Why? Because this material world is dark. And this transcendental knowledge is not born of the material world. It has to descend into the material world. And this is Krishna's special mercy. Through our speculation, through our guesswork, through our intelligence, through our own strength, through our good qualities, we cannot understand anything about Krishna. Even Lord Brahma, when he saw Krishna in Vrindavan, Krishna had just killed what demon? Agasura. Did you hear about that in Raghavir Prabhu's class? Yeah, today? Auspicious. So, he had just killed Agasura, and the soul, Agasura's soul, had waited outside, and Brahma saw this emerge into Krishna's body, his transcendental body. And Brahma was amazed, and he was looking at Krishna, and Krishna was just a young boy, and he was holding in his left, not even in his right hand, but in his left hand, he was holding some yogurt and fruit mixed together, like such an uncultured fellow, with some peacock feather in his hair, and a flute, and a buffalo horn, and a rope, playing with his friends, just a little boy. How is that possible, that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? So Brahma even became bewildered. And the more he tried to test Krishna, the more bewildered he became. Because one cannot understand Krishna except by Krishna's mercy. So therefore this Bhagavad Gita is Krishna's mercy. And somehow or another, if we can obtain Krishna's mercy, then and only then we actually understand Krishna. There is nothing that we can do to understand Krishna, no matter how intelligent. No matter how we try to understand and we study one verse and look at this word and squeeze it and twist it and try to be clever and see this contradiction with this, and we can drive ourselves crazy like that, but we will never understand Krishna until he decides to reveal himself. He has decided to reveal himself through the Bhagavad Gita, through the Srimad Bhagavatam, through the sadhus, the devotees, so many devotees. Preach all over the world, and their business is to reveal Krishna. And where are they getting this knowledge of Krishna from? Because it cannot exist in the material world, they are getting it from Krishna. Through Guru Parampara, Imam Parampara, Kaptam, Imam Ajasa. There is no other way that we can understand. We've discussed that section. So Krishna is explaining here that just like the child cannot understand the birth of his own father. Why? Because his father is his source. How can he understand something that existed prior to his remembrance? So similarly, no living entity, unless Krishna reveals it, can understand anything about Krishna. So this is the process. To hear from Krishna, or hear from those who heard from Krishna, as food for emperor. So Krishna is going to explain something about himself. In what chapter did Krishna explain some transcendental knowledge about himself that we have for? What did he explain in the fourth chapter? What's the Ajo? What is Ajo?
Unborn.
So he's going to say that again. So his Krishna, his body is spiritual. Even though he's playing with his friends, he doesn't have a body like we have a body. His body is composed of Satchidananda. So much potency. And that's actually what Brahma realized. Like, there's so much difference, even though Brahma had created the entire universe, there was so much difference in the potency between Krishna's transcendental body and his body that it was inestimable. He couldn't even estimate the difference in the potency. So Krishna is going to explain something about himself here. Yomam ajam anadim cha veti lokamaheshvaram asamudha samurteshu sabapapai pramuchyate. So Yomam, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he explains in his commentary that Krishna takes his finger and points to his own chest because he is a person. He says, Yomam, anyone who knows me, not the unborn, unmanifest within Krishna, but himself, this Krishna, who has no, there is no difference between him inside and outside. That Krishna is pointing to himself. Yomam ajam. Anyone who knows me is unborn. So he's already said, ajopisam avyayama. I am unborn. But here he's saying it again. I am unborn, ajam. But someone may say that Brahma is also Aja. And not only is Brahma, practically all the sages are Aja, and every soul is Aja. But no one is the next word, Anadim. Anadim means without ultimate beginning. And the source of everyone. The demigods may be Veti Loka Maheshwaram. The demigods may be Loka Maheshwaram. The controllers of all the planets, but they are not anadim. It's only Krishna, anadir adir govinda sarvakarana karana. He is the original beginningless source, and everyone has their beginning in him. So he who knows me as the unborn, as the beginningless, as the supreme lord of all the worlds, he only, undiluted among men, is free from all sins. So this Krishna has explained in the fourth chapter, Janma Karma Jame Divyam Evam Yoviti Tatsaka Takvideyam Punarjaman Naitima Mesha. This is the process of becoming liberated from the material world. Getting out of the material world is knowing Krishna's position and knowing Krishna's activities. And if we actually know them, then we can remember them, and then we can become free from all material encumbrances. This is the process. So therefore, we have to hear about Krishna. If we don't hear about Krishna, and this we'll learn very quickly, so this is actually the secret. This is the secret of advancement in spiritual life. To become Krishna conscious means to take a cotton swab, even though the cotton swab is white color, if you dip it into red ink, it becomes red. It has to become saturated with red ink. So similarly, our consciousness is absorbent like white cotton. And if we keep always absorbed in Krishna consciousness, and I heard Prabhupada say this long, long time ago, it was actually in New Vrindavan, to Hayagriva. He said, the secret, and Brahmananda, he said, the secret of Krishna consciousness is to mold your day in such a way that you cannot forget Krishna. And then he asked Brahmananda, is that difficult? And Brahmananda said, no, Prabhupada, we've already learned how to do that. But unfortunately, Maya is very clever and has a way to for all of us to try to separate us from remembering Krishna. So therefore it's so important that we understand that remembering Krishna, his name, his qualities, his form, his pastime, this is the essence of Krishna consciousness. Even though we may have to work all day long, this is still the essence of Krishna consciousness, remembering Krishna. That's why the best kind of work is preaching. Why? Because we can preach directly about Krishna. We can talk about Krishna, we can say, you take this book, it is so wonderful, it tells about Krishna, it tells about Krishna's form, who is Krishna, Krishna is the Supreme Lord, etc., etc., etc. And here are the pictures in the book, and here they describe all the pictures, and preach, and preach, and preach, and preach. And that way, everything gets accomplished. And if we are in a position like Arjuna, who is not preaching, or his preaching is shooting arrows, and if he takes out his japa beads in the middle of the battlefield and starts chanting his rounds, he's going to get his head chopped off. He can't remember Krishna in that way. But he's very fortunate, because first of all, he's seeing Krishna right in front of him, because Krishna is driving his chariot. And actually, Bhishma said that I was more fortunate than Arjuna, because Arjuna could only see Krishna from the back. But when I was fighting with Krishna, I was seeing him from the front and seeing his lotus eyes, his lotus mouth, and beautiful the dust was so beautiful on his skin. And the perspiration. But if one is performing a duty where one can't remember Krishna all the time, one should always think that I'm engaged in this service by Krishna, which is described in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And give all the fruit to Krishna. I'm doing this for Krishna. I'm working, I have a job, I'm making money. So I'm working for Krishna, even though it may be difficult to remember Krishna. But the perfection of Krishna consciousness, smartavyo satatam Vishnu, is smartavyo nirvana. So always remember Krishna and never forget him. Manmana bhava madhato. Always remember me. Then, one who knows me like this becomes undiluted and free from sins. Now Krishna in text 4 and 5 is going to mention many qualities which are glorious qualities, which are qualities that are helpful in elevating ourselves. But these qualities, as Krishna says, are created by me alone. Intelligence, knowledge, they're glorious. Freedom from doubt and delusion. Forgiveness. This forgiveness is mentioned in the Bhagavatam as being the distinguishing quality of a Brahmana. That he's forgiving. What would make a Brahmana forgiving? We already learned this in the 5th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. What would make a Brahmana forgiving? Yeah, but what is that equal vision that he sees? Pandita Samadarshana. What is that equal vision? Huh? Right, but what is, but he sees them equally, but what is the equality that he sees in them? Yeah.
He sees the soul, so if someone does something bad, he knows that's because they're under the, they're covered over by the most material nature.
Yes, and who are the most material nature under?
That's not bad.
But who are the modes of material nature on this? Super soul. So because everyone is under the modes of material nature, and the modes of material nature are controlled by the super soul, therefore if someone slaps me, that could not have happened unless Krishna has sanctioned it. So therefore, everything is under the control of Krishna. So if I'm going to become angry at anyone, I should become angry at Krishna for doing this, and that we don't do. We don't get angry at Krishna. So therefore, we cannot get angry at anyone else. So therefore, we have to forgive others. And the difficulty is, in the material world, how entangling it is that someone slaps us, then what do we want to do? Not slap them back. Not for a slap, we want to cut their head off. We want to slap them if they bumped into us. But if they slap us, we want to...
He will see my power.
He will know who I am. So the difficulty is that when someone does something to us, it makes such a samskara in the heart, it makes such an impression. Like the heart is like clay. And when there's, if this was clay here, and I went like this, my fingerprints would be in there. So similarly, my handprint, everyone's handprints come into our consciousness, especially if someone hurts us. If we love someone also, but even more than that, when someone hurts us, and we hate them, we get these impressions in our heart, and all we can think about is them all day long, like Kamsa and Sukrapala, only thinking about Krishna. So the difficulty is, these sanskaras in our heart, they will stay in our heart, because they are not in our physical heart. They are in the subtle body, the chitta. They stay in the chitta. And then, in our next life, we will carry that impression with us. And then we will have to get even with them. And then, because we have gotten even with them, they are angry at us. And therefore, in the next life, they have to get even with them. And then for hundreds of lives, this back and forth, hurting people may be going on. So therefore, a brahmana, due to the mode of goodness and his absence of the mode of passion, he learns the art of accepting tatenukampam susamikshamano bhunjai vatmakripavatakam. That Krishna has done this. It's my karma. And Krishna has minimized it. So I'm seeing Krishna's mercy. Jivatiyo mukti pade sudayava. But a person who learns to see like that, he is eligible for liberation because he is not in the material world. Why? Because he's seeing Krishna everywhere. When something good happens to him, he sees Krishna. And when something bad happens to him, he sees Krishna. Krishna's mercy everywhere. Never thinking, I don't deserve it. This is my fault. That I think when something bad happens to me, that I don't deserve it. And when I think when something good happens to me, I think I deserve better. This is my fault. So this fall will keep me in the material world forever. So all these qualities, forgiveness, truthfulness, control of the senses, these are exalted qualities. They are not Krishna consciousness, but they are exalted sub-religious principles that one practically cannot be Krishna conscious without these principles. They're so glorious. Control of the mind, happiness and distress, birth, death, fear, fearlessness, non-violence, equanimity, satisfaction, austerity, charity, fame and infamy. All these various qualities of the living beings are created by me alone. Krishna is explaining this, so we understand that these qualities, since they are created by Krishna, as the sages and demigods are created by Krishna, they cannot help us understand Krishna in and of themselves. We have to hear from Krishna if we want to actually understand Krishna. The seven great sages, and before them, the four other great sages, and the Manus, these are some of the most exalted living entities in the creation. They come from me, born from my mind, and all the living beings populating the various planets descend from them. So one can't understand Krishna by one's own power, because by the powers of our friends, by the powers of the sages, the demigods. There's only one way that one can understand. If we hear from someone who has heard from Krishna or hear from Krishna directly, such as the Bhagavad Gita. One who is factually convinced of this opulence, that Krishna is achintya. What does achintya mean? What does achintya mean? Well, what does inconceivable mean? Yes? Yes, that's what inconceivable is the wrong word. We use achintya, inconceivable. But what is inconceivable? It's just what Krishna is saying, that we cannot conceive of Krishna's position, his potency, his relationship with his energies, etc. Of course, we cannot conceive of it in totality, but we cannot conceive it unless we hear it from the disciple succession. So therefore, that really shows how we have to hear. And we just have to hear with a peaceful, faithful heart. And that is so much so difficult in our Kali Yuga. Because in Kali Yuga, if you have faith, practically you're a fool. Because everyone is a cheater in Kali Yuga. And yet, within this horrible realm of Kali Yuga, which is dark, which is cheating, mandasu manda mateo manda bhagya upadrutaha, where everyone's mind is so disturbed, and that is the prime quality of Kali Yuga, is everyone's mind is disturbed. Because there are so many, there's so much passion and ignorance and agitation everywhere. It is so horrible. There's so much corruption, cheating, etc. Everyone's mind is disturbed. And therefore, everyone has a good reason why not to accept anyone faithfully, accept anyone with authority, except there's only one reason why we should. Despite all the bad reasons, there's one reason why we should. And that is, if we don't, Krishna will not give us any mercy. And if we are sincere and surrender, and have faith, He will protect us despite everything. But it's so difficult in Kali Yuga. It's so difficult. Faith is such a rare commodity in Kali Yuga. And someone worthy of having our faith is so rare also. But we need, without faith, we'll die. Our spiritual life will die. So Krishna is saying, one who is convinced of this opulence of mind and mystic powers of mind, of this position, as the, beyond our ability to understand, what does he do? He engages in unalloyed devotional service. What does unalloyed devotional service mean? It means serving Krishna without any other desire. That is, to the Rupa Goswami's definition of pure devotional service. Kevala Bhakti. Pure, unadulterated devotional service. That means it's service just trying to give to Krishna, not wanting to take anything in return. Very, very, very difficult. Very difficult. That our pleasure is nothing but the pleasure of Krishna and Krishna's devotee. That is pure devotional service. And the prime examples of pure devotees are the residents of Vrindavan. Who even though the gopis of Vrindavan would dress themselves beautifully, but it wasn't for any other reason than to make Krishna smile and give Krishna pleasure. The coward boys, when they told Krishna and Balaram, "Oh, Krishna and Balaram, it's already late in the morning, and we're so hungry. Where can we get something to eat?" So what were they really thinking? What were they really thinking? What?
That Krishna.
But because they have they know how to proper etiquette, they won't speak, "Oh Krishna, you're hungry, let's get something, we should get you something to eat." Because then what will they say? Just like if you come to my room and I say, "I'm going to go out and buy some mangoes for you to eat." Then you'll say, no, I'm not hungry. But if I say, "Oh, I'm going to go buy some mangoes for my deity right now, and I'm going to offer it to my deity," then you'll say, "Oh, very nice." So this is the nature of the very sweet and subtle dealings. So that is devotional service. Everything for Krishna. For Krishna's pleasure. And to do that, one has to love Krishna. So after explaining that one who understands this opulence and position of Krishna engages in devotional service, that there is no doubt of this. Because this is what understanding means. It is not theoretical understanding, but it means that you surrender to Krishna the way Krishna wants. You act in such a way Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would say, act in such a way, not that we try and see Krishna, but act in such a way that Krishna will see us. Because we cannot attain Krishna by our own power. But if Krishna wants, it's very easy for him to give us everything. So now, Krishna is going to explain. Done it again. I saw the lights. But I can put on light over here. But I can't turn back the clock. These four verses are very, very important. How many of you know these four verses? Beginning with Aham Sarvasya Prabhavoha. Oh, everyone should learn these four verses. Maybe I should ask them on the test, but everyone has to know them. Do you know them? You should learn them. Okay? You ask them on the test. Will that help me? Huh? 8, 9, 10, and 11 in the 10th chapter. Aham savasya prabhavo matak savam pravartite iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samandita. Aham savasya prabhavo matak savam pravartite, that everything comes from me. I am the source of everything. And that includes, as Prabhupada translates it, the spiritual and material worlds both. Krishna has said in the 7th chapter that he is the source of the material world, all the material energy, gross and subtle. And he said that he is the source of the Kshetragya, the soul, Jiva Bhuta Mahabaho. But here he's saying that he is the source of the spiritual world also. The material world, the spiritual, everything is coming from Krishna. And yet, he's in Vrindavan, playing with his cowherd boyfriends. Someone wanted to keep ecstasy in his back. That is amazing, to think about it. That he could, just imagine if you could do anything you wanted, if you had all the power that existed, the totality of power. Now when the Christians imagine what God is like, what do? They imagine who is the most, they put him on a big throne with a big crown and sometimes a scepter in his hand, a stick like that. But of course they never give him a face.
He has the
what?
World's largest bakery.
Yeah.
Bakery? Because he's giving everybody
their daily bread. But he's also frying everyone, so he does more than bake. So I once heard from Vrindavan about something really funny. They say that when they show God, they don't show him never as a young boy or anything like that. When they show him, how old do they show him? Like, he's old, right? Not 40, he's like 70 to 80, somewhere between 70 and 80, right? But after all, he's not 70 or 80, he's more than 70 or 80 years old. So he's beginningless, right? So he's billions and billions and billions and billions of years old. So he, according to them, he stops aging when he's 70 to 80. So if you can stop aging, why stop at 70 to 80? Why not stop when you're 16? As long as the principle is stopping your aging. Ah, that's an enlightening state. So if you can stop, you might as well stop before you're an old man. So Krishna is the source of everything with all power. Though iti matva, thus knowing this, what does someone do who actually knows this? Bhajante mam, serves Krishna, Buddha Baba Samandita, with great attention and great affection, being careful to do everything that will please Krishna. That is what great attention and great affection means. To do it in such a way that it will please Krishna exactly the way he wants it. That is bhakti. That is bhava. That is Buddha Baba Samandita. And this, if we understand this principle in dealing with our spiritual master, in dealing with Srila Prabhupada, in dealing with the deities, in dealing with the devotees, If we understand this one principle, our whole life will be so nice. It will be automatically, everything will be just right. We'll know just how to act. If we just do everything that we do with great attention so that Krishna will be pleased. And what stops us from acting like that? We don't want to please Krishna. That is the problem. One time I was talking to one sadhu in Vrindavan. Actually, it wasn't me. Actually, it was Mataji, my wife. She went to see one sadhu. And the sadhu said, "So how is your bhajan?" And it's like when someone says, "How are you today?" You never say, "Oh, my knee hurts, and my head hurts, and this hurts, and that hurts." You say, "Oh, very well. And you?" So she said, "Oh, very well. My bhajan's fine. And how is yours?"
"Not good."
Body. Insincerity. That is the only cause of all problems. And it's so easy to see everyone else's insincerity. But I don't know where I first heard this, but when you're pointing one finger at someone else, you're pointing three at yourself. Okay? Very difficult to see our own position. Therefore, the pure devotees are very humble. Itti matva bhajante mam. So people actually know Krishna's position as he's describing it. Who actually know it. Who bhajante, they worship Krishna. They are learned. Because this is the end of knowledge. And they worship him with great attention and great, great, great love. It is natural, actually, to worship the great and the powerful. And this is how Krishna is explaining himself at this point. I am the source of all the spiritual and material worlds. So here Krishna is saying that he is Swayam Bhagavan. He is the source. I'm Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam. But he is the source of all, of everything. Of everything. And this is Krishna. He is our Lord. Everything emanates from him. From me, Krishna says. The wise who perfectly know this engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. So first is the knowledge and then the characteristics of pure devotional service. With all their hearts, giving everything to Krishna for his pleasure. Second verse. The next verse explains the activities of such devotees. Because it says, they bhajante mam. So they do bhajan to Krishna. They worship and serve Krishna. But what is the nature of their bhajan? What is their bhajan? This is the definition of bhajan here. Madhita Madgata Prana Boriantas Paraspara Katayantas Chamam Nityam Tashanti Charamantara. And the result of bhajan, Madhita, this is the first thing again, that the minds are, the chitta, or consciousness of minds, are focused on Krishna. So sometimes when we do service, especially when we manage in this time, there's so much anxiety. But that anxiety, as Prabhupada would call it, is transcendental anxiety. If we're doing it for Krishna, for his pleasure, then, because then our consciousness is focused.